Welcome to the Storycraft Cafe. Come in, grab a cup of your favorite beverage, and get ready to join the storytelling conversation. Storycraft Cafe is brought to you by Dabble, the ultimate cloud-based fiction writing software. Here we're going to bring together storytellers from all walks to encourage and empower you to craft your best story. Welcome here to the Storycraft Cafe. I am your host, Hank Garner. Today, I am super excited to have Catherine Faulkner on the show with me. She has an amazing new book. It is newly released. It's called The Other Mothers. And if you love thrillers the way I do, this is a must read. You've got to grab this book. It is so much fun. And I say fun in a tongue-in-cheek kind of way, because it's a fun read. The subject matter is absolutely nerve-wracking, and that's what makes it so fun. But The Other Mothers, if you have not gotten this book yet, go grab it today. We're going to talk about it today. Welcome to the show, Catherine.
Thank you so much for having me. It's so great to be here.
Absolutely. I'm so excited to have you. I read the book over our Christmas break, and I've been had so much anticipation to talk with you about this. Catherine, I love to start each show with kind of a fun question to kind of get things going. And one question that I love to ask people is, what is your first memory of wanting to be a writer or storyteller?
Oh, that's really interesting. I think I was in the third grade, and it was when I got very interested in writing stories, but also making them into books. So I would like staple them into my own little books. And then I remember my teacher saying that she loved my stories so much, she was taking them home to read to her children. And I basically thought I'd done it then, you know, I've made it. I'm a writer. But it's quite hard because I've always instinctively written stories. I mean, that's just something I've always done. Yeah. But yeah. It's always been a big part of my life.
Yeah. There's I've heard a number of people talk about creating books like that when they're young, and you know, stapling them and you know, making a cover. And for me, there's this interesting time where when you're little, you just imagine that books are just ethereal and they just kind of exist in the universe just because they exist. And one day, for whatever reason, you realize that there are people behind these books. And, you know, this came from someone's imagination, and then they wrote the story. And then, you know, invariably a whole team of people get involved in the process of editing and publishing and, you know, cover designers and, you know, all of that. And then when you see a book sitting on a shelf, this is the work of a person, or multiple people usually have been involved in the process. And, you know, there's an interesting thing. There's a switch that flips that, you know, kind of lets you know, well, if someone else can do this, maybe I can do this. And it's kind of like a door opening in a way.
Absolutely. And then for me, the impetus to actually write my book was somebody else actually at my work doing it. When I was a journalist for 10 years, but one day this girl who sat next to me said, "Oh, by the way, I'm leaving." And I said, "Oh, right. Where are you off to?" And she said, "Oh, I've got a book deal and I'm going to write 2 books. And I suddenly thought, hang on, I want to do that. That's my thing. Kind of really spurred me on to actually write a book, something I'd always wanted to do. And for some reason, I doubted myself, or thought maybe if people don't want to read it, or it'd be really embarrassing to write a book and then it doesn't get published. And then I realized I didn't care about all that stuff. I needed to do this. And so I started writing Greenwich Park, which is my first novel.
And another amazing book. There's been a progression from that book to the new one in your writing style. And I don't mean that in, it definitely feels like the same author, if you know what I mean. But it's like with the Other Mothers, it's kind of the scope has broadened a little bit. And when you read the books, you'll know what I mean. But it's I don't know. Do you attribute your style progression to anything in particular?
I think I was just trying to do something a bit more challenging and complicated with the other mothers. And yeah, it's a broader canvas, I think. And yeah,
broader canvas. That's the term I was reaching for.
Yeah, I guess I was pushing myself to do something even better. You know, I had this amazing reaction to Greenwich Park, kind of went a bit crazy, especially in North America. People really loved it. And I didn't want to disappoint people the second time around. So I wanted to do something that was really felt, that people would say, wow, this is really good as well. You know, my worst nightmare was people thinking, oh, I liked Greenwich Park, but this one wasn't. So I worked really hard to kind of make it bigger and better. I was trying to do something quite structurally challenging. So I got into a bit of trouble with my editor over that, but we got there in the end.
I want to touch back on your journalism career for just a minute. You worked for a decade as a journalist, investigative, as you guys might say across the pond, journalist. What got you interested in journalism to begin with?
I guess I was always interested in writing. I was also really interested in the world, in people. I've always been quite nosy. There's a funny thing that happens to you when you're the kind of little kid that likes writing stories, is that you kind of go through your education and secondary schooling, and it's kind of taught to you that creative writing is something that kind of goes away as a subject. It's not something you're encouraged to do. And it's like, no, you need to get serious now. What's a proper job? You know, I guess I didn't really know much about publishing. I didn't really know that books could be my career in that way. And to me, I was quite excited by the idea of being a journalist, of writing about what was going on. I'm interested in the news, interested in politics and things, all of that sort of stuff. So it was quite a natural fit for me, and I wanted to write. And I don't think I had a book in me when I was 18, 19 years old, you know? So, it was quite a natural, it felt like a natural career path for me, and I really loved it, you know, and I still do some journalism and really enjoy it. But I think it's given me a lot actually as an author. It's given me a lot of inspiration and a lot of stories that I can kind of call up on.
Yeah. Over the last 10 years, we've done more than 1,500 author interviews. And along that way, I've gotten to know quite a number of authors who began their career as journalists. And I always thought that that was an interesting path. And most great author stories, you know, are this kind of circuitous path that people take to becoming an author and, you know, gaining life experience here and there. And those things that ultimately turn into, you know, fodder for stories. But I've always thought it interesting, the path from journalist to fiction writer, because on the surface, you think that a journalist, tells the truth, is reporting the truth of what happened, and a fiction writer is making it all up. So on the surface, they seem to be diametrically opposed. But I think there are some kind of under the surface connections there that one feeds the other in a strange way. Have you felt that connection? And did you, when you switched from, being a journalist to writing fiction, was that a difficult switch for you? Or did you find that your years in journalism left you with all sorts of story ideas? Like, how do you feel that one feeds the other, and what was that transition like for you?
Yeah, it's a really good question.
That's a complicated question.
No. I completely know what you're getting at. And I think you're right. You certainly have to know the difference between what you're doing when you're being a journalist and when you're being a writer. But actually, I guess most writers draw their inspiration from real life, right? And being a writer and thinking of the story is all about taking something that you've noticed in real life. It could be just like a little thing that you think has caught your interest for some reason and thinking, well, what if, what if then that happened and then that happened and then that person did that, what would happen then? And what would that person's story be? And what would that scenario look like? And I think it's, if you have the kind of author brain, then you sit in court as a journalist and you're thinking things like that all the time. And you're thinking, oh, what would happen if, this story was a bit different? Or, and it just gives you endless ideas for characters and situations. And also sometimes as a journalist, you get kind of half the story. So you get left with, you cover a court case and then you think, what happened to the people left behind by this tragedy? Or what happened to them before that led them up to this point? So you're always wondering about the story, I think, the real story. And I think something that comes through, I hope, in The Other Mothers is some of my frustration as a journalist about getting to the story, because sometimes it just feels impossible. It's really, really difficult to get to the real truth. However good you are, however much you dig, there's always some dark corner of the story that you can't reach, like a person who won't talk to you or a piece of evidence that doesn't exist anymore or something. And so what's really fun as a fiction writer is that you can fill in the dark corners with your own bits of the story. And that's kind of what the experience is like of reading The Other Mothers, because you're following the main character, Tash, who's a journalist, and she's investigating this story and she's piecing it together as best she can. But at one point she says to her husband, you never have the full picture. He says, you don't have the full picture. So how can you know this woman was murdered? And she says, that's not how it works as a journalist. You never have the full picture. You never have everything, but you have to piece it together as best you can. But the treat for the reader is that you do get the full picture in the end, because you've got Sophie and you get to hear her story. And as a fiction writer, you can break the rules and you can do whatever you like. You can show the reader however much or however little that you want. So that's what's really fun and satisfying, I guess, about writing fiction versus doing journalism. Journalism's constrained by the truth and how much of the truth you can get at. And fiction is not constrained by anything. And that's what makes it so exciting.
I have one other question about journalism. And I usually ask a variation of this question to just about everyone who's been in journalism before. And I always get a lot of times I get a very similar answer from people. And the question I would have is, do you feel like as a fiction writer that you added any particular tools to your writer toolbox, being a journalist, that now helps you as a fiction writer? And I'll just go ahead and tell you the answer that most people give me is that they learn to write on a deadline. And that was more important than anything. The putting your backside in a chair and, doing the work. Aside from that, do you feel like journalism equipped you in any special way to be a fiction writer?
I definitely agree with that. I think writing's a muscle. And if you write every day and you're a journalist, you just have to sit and get it done to deadline, then it makes you probably a bit more productive as an author. You don't have these, you hear about people sort of lying on a sofa and staring at the wall. I don't do that. I show up, I sit down, I do my 8 hours a day. I treat it like a job, like I used to treat my journalistic job. And sometimes I write a load of nonsense, that's the problem. But, I always show up and I always write. And I try very hard not to miss any deadlines. I think, though, that there are other things. So it's partly thinking about your reader. So if you've been a journalist at any sort of level, you're thinking about, you're trained to write for your reader. It's not about your ego. It's not about anything, except you have to keep that person hooked on the story. You have to know how to, as a journalist, you're working so hard. You have to compete with so many things to get the reader's attention. You know, newspapers aren't competing with each other anymore. They're competing with Netflix and Facebook and Instagram right. for your eyeballs, right? So right. You, to get eyeballs on your story is really, you have to be very, very good at writing and in an engaging way. And you have to dispense with any kind of unnecessary nonsense that isn't serving the reader that you've just put in because you like to write in this flowery way. Like, there's no tolerance for that. So you become quite ruthless and fixed on your mind as an author is fixed on where it should be, which is this serving the reader? You know, is anything actually happening in this chapter? You know, do we need so many characters? Is this just confusing? Do we need all this stuff? You know, I love this passage about this beautiful nature reserve or whatever, but does the reader really need it? So I think you learn, I think as a journalist, you learn to be a little bit more like that, a bit tougher on yourself, a bit of your own editor, or I hope I've learned that. And to take your ego out of it a little bit as well. And there's also this skill called casting a cold eye, or that's what it was called when I went to journalism training. And it's about being able to look at your copy cold, like a reader, and read it like a reader and work out what's going wrong with it. That was a really important skill for me. And so I think you become, I think you're quite good at doing that. And also you're used to basically a very tough, newsrooms are tough places. So you're used to criticism and you develop a thick skin. I think that's been very useful for me. You know, when I write a first draft and I send it to my editor, I get these gorgeous letters back from my editor at Bloomsbury or Simon & Schuster in North America. I love this. It's so great. And then in the middle, there's this like, well, I think maybe we could tweak this or tweak that. And da, 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 da. But basically, and then it always ends on like a positive note and it's so uplifting and lovely. And it's like goes on for 9 pages. And actually,
a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down. Yeah,
totally. But whereas, you know, what I'm used to in the newsroom is someone ringing me up and saying, that's going in the bin. That was rubbish. Try again. You know, and I, that's me putting it in more polite language than I would be used to. So I think that you're quite good at, I do know other authors, debut authors, for example, who get these editorial letters and they're like, I can't believe they want to change my book. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, this is so normal. You know, I'm so used. So I think that's also a good thing about having come from journalism to the relatively polite world that is publishing and not the other way around, perhaps.
That was one of the better answers to that question that I've ever heard. That was, that's great. Great, useful information. Catherine, one thing that I'm fascinated by is the beginnings of stories, the place where a story is born. A lot of people will ask, you know, where do you get your ideas from? And I think that question is a little trite and maybe shallow, because if you're a writer, there are ideas everywhere. They're just flying around. And for whatever reason, there's that one idea that kind of floats a little higher than the rest or just nags at you that just won't go away. And then that becomes the thing. And at one moment, a story idea comes and you as the writer, you know, you have to kind of dig it out of the ground. And when you polish it up and then it, you know, excavate this story. And then, you know, in one form or fashion, it is a story. Then it is a book, but you have to work at it and work on it and work on it. And it's your job as the writer to pull it all out. But for this book in particular, The Other Mothers, what was that moment of creation? Where did this initial story idea come from?
Well, first of all, I love the way you put that, because that's exactly how it, you know, you have these ideas kind of floating around in the ether and then some just float a bit higher than others and nag at you. And I had exactly that with The Other Mothers. So I had this one thing that happened to me like 10 years ago when I was a trainee reporter, and it stayed with me. And it was an inquest I went to. And so it was about the death of this young man, and it was totally unexplained how he died. And this inquest basically concluded, we don't know what happened. And I just wasn't happy with that. I wasn't satisfied with it. I was so frustrated by the fact that no one had got to the bottom of this. And I just thought that this could have been a murder. Nobody really knows what had happened here. So I had always sort of, it bothered me that there had been no conclusion to this inquest, no proper conclusion. And when I was researching the other mothers, I talked to lots of coroners and pathologists and people who worked in criminal justice. And they told me, yeah, absolutely. You know, a murder could be missed in this way and written off as an accident just because there just wasn't enough evidence of anything, enough concrete stuff to hold on to. And I thought that whole case gave you so much imaginative space to imagine how a murder could be missed and written off as an accident at an inquest. So that's how the idea came to me for the book. And yeah, so that was the first kind of spark, I guess.
Wow. So did this book come about during the pandemic lockdowns?
Yeah, so that was, well, I started writing it before the pandemic, but it was largely written during the pandemic. So my very unsuccessful story of the pandemic was that I had a baby in February 2020, my second baby. And so I was supposed to be on maternity leave for a year, having a nice relaxing year with my older daughter in daycare, and writing and juggling a newborn, which sounds mad, but I did it with Greenwich Park. I wrote Greenwich Park on my first maternity leave, so I thought I would be able to pull the same trick again. But of course, the daycare closed. I couldn't have any family support, and we were all locked in our house. So it was actually written in quite intense circumstances. And I think some of that intensity about early motherhood and how tough I was finding it really went into the book in the end. And especially how tough I found it after having my second daughter. And I think, you know, I experienced a bit of postnatal depression. And I think that was largely, you know, born by the pandemic and the circumstances of being a new mother in that time, which was so tough for so many people all across the world. Will have experienced the same, that, you know, it's an isolated time anyway, but then to actually be told you can't see your family or your friends, you can't leave the house, it was really, really rough. So but you know, everything in life is copy, so that all kind of went into the character of Claire and her experience after she has her baby and the kind of dark place that she ends up going to. But yeah, no, I've forgotten the original question now. What were we talking about?
You asked me about
the pandemic.
Yeah.
And how it came about. Yes, it was written a lot. So I wrote a lot of it during the pandemic. And I also had to kind of set it somewhere where it didn't take me to, it wasn't too difficult to research. So it's kind of ended up being set in the wetlands, which is very near where I live. That's a real place, the wetlands where Sophie's body is found in the novel. And it's one of the few places I could kind of walk to with my pram. So, but I got really interested in that as a location. And it has this kind of creepy quality to it. And especially when there was nobody there, you know, except for me, right, just wandering around going slowly mad. So yeah, that was all kind of part of it, really.
The book is written with a very interesting narrative structure. Well, first off, the viewpoint, we've got a couple of different viewpoints in the book, but it's written mostly, if not all, I'm trying to remember, first person present tense, which is not unheard of at all, but it's rarer to have this sort of immediate feeling, this present tense. Was that that was obviously a choice that you made, but was that something that you were thinking about from the beginning?
Yeah, it's funny with that. I don't think that I think it's just how I naturally lean towards writing. It's interesting because my third book, which I'm just finishing a draft of now, or hopefully it'll be finished. I keep thinking it'll be finished any day and it's just not finishing, but it's written in third person, and I couldn't really tell you why. I think I wanted to have that immediacy and that intimacy between the reader and Tash. I wanted us to really be going on this journey with her. And really experiencing the intensity of her life, her emotional state. And I think I did the same thing with Helen in Greenwich Park. And I like as a reader, I guess I like to be close to the main character and their psychological state. With Sophie, I think her chapters are in past tense. I think they are. I just have to go and check this now. I think her character, her chapters are in past tense. And of course, we know from the beginning of the book that Sophie's dead. So we know we're hearing a story that's going to end not well and that is in the past. So it's kind of, I suppose it was one tool to differentiate it for the reader. But yeah, gotcha. I think present tense is how I tend to write. I think I just like to keep things exciting. Maybe it's a bit of a cheap device for doing that, but I guess I write how I like to read. I'm always thinking about my readers, and I just kind of assume they're like me. They like the kind of the same kind of books and the same kind of thing as I do. So yeah.
Well, and like you mentioned in the beginning, we know something happened. Like we know that from literally from almost page one. But in the book, we, and I'm just going to flip this. I should have been better prepared and mark this, but, so like in the beginning, April, 2019, that's when the book opens. And then if I remember right, when you get over to the first, yeah, it's 2017. And so we kind of have a bit of time hopping, back and forth, and it's, I don't want to say that it's confusing for a minute until you get your bearings, but it's written so with the pace is so quick and it just pulls you right in. So even though we're kind of bouncing around in the beginning, you don't know exactly what's happening, but you're engaged and along for the ride. Did you decide from the beginning, okay, I'm going to kind of have the reader, you know, off their best foot, a little off balance in the beginning? And was that, or does that just the way that the narrative structure kind of came out in the writing? Like, I guess what I'm asking is, did you plan it that way, or did the story just kind of unfold to you that way? Therefore you delivered it that way to us.
It's such an interesting one. And I don't know if I fully know the answer. I think I am consciously thinking about what I'm doing for the reader and what the reader's experiencing. And I definitely, you definitely want to intrigue the reader. So I think you want to start with, I was hoping that, you know, from the reader's point of view, you open with this thing that's happened in Cornwall. She's in a police station. So obviously something's happened. What is it? Why is she there? Who's been on the cliffs with her? Why is she in this police station? How has she ended up there? So you've got this like, the reader's already asking why and wanting to hopefully know the answers to those questions. And then you're going back to this, to into 2017, to somebody else's life. And so I'm hoping you're thinking, well, how do these things connect to each other? But it's a balance, isn't it? Between keeping the reader guessing and off balance and not leaving them totally confused. So that's right. The balance you always want to, you want to strike. So I hope I've done that. But to be honest, I always get embarrassed asking this question about how much I plan. I'm not really a planner. I'm really not. And I don't find it very fun to plan. I find it really fun to just write. But then what I do is that once I have my first draft, I think loads about the structure and exactly how I want the story to unfold structurally. And I basically redo the whole thing and reconstruct it into something that's hopefully got the right place, folds in the right way. And that sounds completely mad, but it does actually sort of work. Because I have, I think, enough of a feel for the arch of the story and how it needs to go to kind of freestyle it the first time and then really correct it and make sure it hits at the right places in the second edit.
Yeah.
Also, if I just had it all written out on a spreadsheet and I knew chapter by chapter what was going to happen, I'd be really bored writing it. It would feel like color by numbers. You know, I just wouldn't, it wouldn't be a fun creative process for me. And I actually think writing a book is such hard work. If you're not having fun, I just think that you'd end up doing it, or I wouldn't end up finishing it. I'd just give up, give the money back, go back to my old job probably. So,
do you have an idea of the ending of the book, of where the story's going to resolve and then you just have to figure out how to get there, or
No, I do have an idea for an ending, but I always change it. I just changed yesterday. I changed my ending for the third book, and I'm due to hand that draft in 20 days. So, I mean, I am a little bit seat of the pants about these things, but I just had a better idea because now I'm there and now all my characters are really real for me and I'm really in it. I think, I thought the ending was annoying me because I was just like, I think the readers will just, it's a good ending, but the readers will have guessed it.
Right.
But now I've thought of a better one. So it's fine. And I think it's going to be, so you can make them think it's one thing and then another thing, which is just fun, right? You want a twist at the end. That's what you want. I think this works better for the reader. I've made myself a lot of work to do in the next 20 days to sort it all out. Just don't tell my editor I told you this. But yeah, it's just how I do it. And it keeps it interesting for me and it keeps it fun. And I think that it's hard to have all the ideas at the beginning, I think the ideas come from writing your way into the story, getting to know your characters. And I think if it's working correctly, your characters sort of do things that you don't expect. And sometimes scenes end in ways you don't expect. Or the scene, you write the scene and then you go back on it and you think, actually, the key thing about the scene is this little weird thing that happened. And that leads you off in a different direction to where you thought you were going. I'm a big believer in leaving space for all of that stuff because I think that's where you get your really good ideas. I think what I usually start with is a spark of an idea and a place. Place is quite important to me. I like to have a place and some characters. And then I have maybe, say, if we're thinking of it like a journey, I guess I have a few stops I want to make on the way that I think would be fun. But I don't always know the exact destination.
Well, it worked out really well in this one.
Good.
The Other Mothers, available everywhere now. Go grab it from your local bookstore. If you don't have a great local bookstore, we'll put links in the show notes where you can grab it from Amazon. From Audible, I just listened to the audiobook and it's amazing. Did you have any input on the audiobook production?
No, thank goodness, because I'd be terrible. And I'm so thrilled with it. I think it's amazing. I mean, the audiobook of Greenwich Park actually won an award. It won an audio award for best thriller, which was amazing. So I was sort of worried that the audiobook of The Other Mothers wouldn't be as good. And I think audiobooks are so important. I mean, I love audiobooks. I wanted it to be really good. And no, it's not. I don't think it will disappoint you if that's your thing. It's a great audiobook. It's a great listen.
Absolutely. The Other Mothers, go grab it today. Catherine, this has been so much fun chatting. Thank you for taking time to join us on the show.
Not at all. Thanks so much. It's been an absolute pleasure.
That's our episode for today. There's so much more to come as we talk to authors about the craft of writing, but also the business of publishing. Be sure to subscribe to the Storycraft Cafe podcast in your favorite podcast app so that you never miss an episode. The Storycraft Cafe is made possible by Dabbl. Writing a book is challenging. Your writing tool should not be. Dabbl is an easy-to-use online writing tool packed with helpful features that allow beginning novelists and published authors to create amazing stories. Visit us at dabblewriter.com and start your free trial today. Thanks for listening.